This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Declan Buckley and Barbara Scully are here. First, you think you're an adult. Hi, guys.
Hello.
How are you?
Let's kick off with this one. Sure. I've recently separated after a 16-year marriage and we have four children. About 7 years ago, my wife told me she no longer loved me and that I was free to leave if I wanted. I chose to stay because our children were all under 10 and I hoped we could work on the marriage. I tried things like counselling, but nothing really changed. A few years later, we had the opportunity to build our dream home. We agreed we would both try to improve the relationship if we went ahead with it. Unfortunately, things still didn't improve. Last year, I kissed someone else on a night out. I had never done anything like that before and I told my wife straight away. After that, she said the marriage was over. I ended up leaving the house at her request and now live about 100 kilometres away with my parents. I feel like I reacted without thinking at the time. I travel back and forth often to see my children, but now I feel like I've lost everything, my home and daily life with them. I'm struggling to move forward and don't know whether I should keep trying to change her mind or accept that it's over and start rebuilding my life.
Oh, God. This letter is actually kind of sad, isn't it? Yeah, we've all got sad faces. And I'm sorry that the writer has now found himself in a situation where he considers he's lost everything, because that's like a hard place to be. Having said that, having read the letter, it's clear that his marriage was in trouble for some time. I mean, it was 7 years ago that his wife said that she didn't love him anymore. And then, you know, like the way you hear some couples decide to have another baby in the hope that that'll be the glue that'll put everything back together again. They decided to build a dream house in the hope that they could rebuild their relationship. And obviously that hasn't happened. And now he's living 100 kilometres away from his kids and back in with his parents. Like, you know, it's bleak. So sympathy for that. What we don't know from the letter is how much talking has been done with his wife. Mm. He mentions that he had counselling, but he didn't say we had counselling. He said he had counselling. So, I'm just not sure, because what I think needs to happen now is that, number one, he needs to absolutely confirm, to get clarity, as he said, on whether the marriage is absolutely dead in the water, over and gone, or whether there's any hope of trying to repair it. And number two, then, he needs to get, if that is the case, if the marriage is over and beyond saving, which I'm kind of thinking it possibly is, he needs to get some kind of roadmap into his head where he can get his life back on track, not just for himself, but also for his time with his children, because that's really important. So a serious summit, I think, is needed with himself and the wife, where the two of them sit down and have an open and frank conversation about where they're at and whether this is it or whether there is any chance of retrieving the situation. And doing that with a counsellor, I think, might help rather than just the two of them trying to work it out on their own. And then, assuming that it is over, they need to work out a better arrangement for him where he needs to be near the kids, and he needs his own place. I mean, he says they built their dream home. So I'm kind of in my head, I see a big sprawling mansion, do you know? So I'm wondering, could that be downsized so that some equity could be freed up so that he could have somewhere to rent or to buy that was nearer his children? Mm-hmm. I think being 100 kilometres away from your kids has got to be really hard. So it's messy and it's not going to be easy. But I think the children also need him to be nearer them as well. Mm. So I think that's probably a priority, assuming that the marriage is over, which we're not entirely sure of.
Are we not?
I would have been leaning on the side of it's
very over.
Over, yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't want to be cruel.
I'm a positive kind of
person. Yeah, but sometimes positivity can err into the land of delusion. And
true.
And I think there's been a little bit of wishful thinking going on here. Now, I don't know what the perspective of the wife is here, but it seems to me like what the wife is doing is being quite clear about what her perspective is in terms of the romantic aspect of their relationship, but is also being quite generous and given scope as to what his role can still be within the family. And they've tried to make it work.
It's not very generous, though, if he's out in his ear.
Yeah, but I mean,
and she's, I like, I, maybe I'm wrong, but when he said their dream house, like,
it's not generous in terms of the outcomes. But I think, look, here's somebody who is trying to hold on to a past that is, that wasn't ever real. Like that's for, that's 7 years since the first time she turned around and actually had the guts, if you like, to say to his face, I don't love you anymore. That didn't just, it wasn't, she woke up that morning and everything was different.
Build the dream house and presumably take on a mortgage, which is now preventing him from moving out of his parents' house.
Yeah.
Like, why would they do that? And then I'm wondering, did he kiss the woman or whoever he kissed? On purpose?
Like, no, but I mean, no, there's a whole, that's a whole different
thing. Happen.
That's a whole different thing. That's like somebody, you know, that's somebody looking for a bit of emotional. I don't feel, I don't see anything wrong with what he did there, because if you're living in a kind of loveless marriage, to use that cliche, you know, reaching out for the comfort of a stranger isn't entirely a strange thing.
I would accept that if he hadn't straight away gone home and told his wife. Why did he do that?
That's maybe because he, look, now we're getting into the deep psychology of the stuff, which is a total waste of time.
Where I'm really comfortable.
Where you are, deep and
really comfortable, psychological. Deeply psychological, yeah.
Look, the texters have got in touch. They say, she doesn't love him and told him to leave. She kicked him out. The kiss was a great excuse for her.
Exactly. Yeah. That's where I was going with that. Yeah. That's what I think happened. I think he may have not realised that what he was giving her was the perfect excuse to say, you've betrayed me, when in fact, she'd already quit on the relationship 7 years ago.
Yes,
and I think what you're dealing with now is somebody who's stuck in the past, who needs to find a way to move forward. And the only way to move forward is to accept that certain parts of his life are irretrievable.
Gone.
That's gone.
I suppose you're also talking about, okay, so she did come and say, this is over, or I'm not really interested in this, you can leave. They decided to stay together and they tried different things and build a big house. I'm like, surely from his perspective, you could kind of understand thinking, maybe there's something else here, maybe not right now, but like, maybe we can build to something. Like, it's very passive on her part to declare it's done. And then still kind of be involved.
She's invested in this big house, like, and this kind of, which always is like a new phase of life in this dream. Like, it's not just we moved house, it's their dream home.
Like, why didn't she leave? Was it just the house?
Exactly. That's exactly it.
Yeah.
But that's where I think there's a chink of possibility.
Yeah, but a lot of people's personalities are not as dominantly active as what you're asking for. You're asking for somebody to be really clear about what they want. And people don't always act like that. So what we're dealing with is real people doing real stuff, as opposed to woulda, shoulda, coulda stuff. You know, where,
but she's also been obviously not content, but like,
yeah, she's had a big house out of it.
I didn't want to say that,
well,
but that's,
let's
exactly,
call a spade a spade. No, look, this is the whole point. We're at a fork in the road, and you say the options are, we're going to split up. And, you know, life stays the way it is, whatever. Or we go down the cul-de-sac of, let's try build us a big house and see what happens. I think a lot of people might say, well, let's see what happens, because maybe, but at the end of the day, it didn't work.
But he has not said at any point, I mean, he said, I'm struggling to move forward. The first thing he needs to do to move forward is to sort out his living arrangement. Mm. Like, he can move forward living in his childhood bedroom 100 kilometres away from his kids. And I think he's quite entitled to say to the wife, we need to sell this up so that we can release some equity that I can then reduce the
one strand of building a new life for himself.
Yeah, so that's the basic. That's the basic thing that he needs to do. Then he can rebuild a relationship with his kids if he's not 100 kilometres away.
He has to first acknowledge that there is no future where he's moving back into the master bedroom of that dream house. Because that's just not, that's not happening.
Yeah.
And I think in the end of the day, for both of them, they both, you know, they're... Dream house is no longer the dream house.
But also the kids, like, you know, I mean, for
how old are the kids now?
Because
I think the kids, I don't think we know.
And this is, someone is flagging this on text. Can the family home be sold when the children are so young? Well, they're presuming they're young, but we actually don't know.
It can be downsized, I think. You know what I mean? You can't chuck the kids out and say, you know, but you can downsize it from this large luxury home. They're 16 years married, so I'm thinking their kids are young teenagers. And I would imagine you can downsize the home in order to make it, the kid make it. And I mean, I'd say the kids would be quite happy if they went back to wherever they were living before they built the dream home or similar, so that dad could be closer by. It would actually suit her as well, because single parenting is difficult. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's. I don't know. A lot of texts here seeming to think that she shafted him for a house, used him for the house.
Yeah, I'm kind of like, I was loath to say that, but yeah.
And it is that situation that's kind of maybe the dark underbelly of his kind of delusion, is that he doesn't want to accept that his worsened situations now are based on not accepting the truth 7 years ago, and you know, giving it a go. But actually the outcome of him giving it a go is that either he's now financially liable for this massive house that he's not living in, and then his own living situation is so bleak,
awful,
as you say.
Yeah.
And that's a very difficult one, because, you know, as you mentioned, the kids are involved, and then, you know, extracting yourself from a marriage, all that stuff is really messy. I think it's the first step has to be, you have to go, right, where am I now? And the acceptance of a broken
relationship. But the two of them have to sit down, as parents, the two of them have to sit down and work that out. She has a role to play in that as well. And the two of them have to sit down, because the most important people actually are the children, and the children being able to see their dad on a more regular basis than living 100 kilometres away. So I think she's involved in that sit down as well.
The other positive thing
future.
I can see in this situation is it doesn't seem like it's not violently or, you know, argumentatively, like, you know, acrimonious.
There's kind of a passiveness about
it. Yeah, and I think that's kind of the bit that's confusing people, is that it's passive. They both have to, somebody has to put on their,
girl pants.
And acknowledge where they are and then move on from there.
Yeah, and work towards the greater good, which is their children, obviously.
I mean, sure, aren't the government bringing in incentives now to put barn buildings and things in your backyard people could live in? Maybe he could put a cabin in the backyard.
Maybe. We'll see. That's an entirely different situation.
I'm trying to be
helpful. Anyway, we'll move on. I'm looking for some advice about my adult daughter, who is in her late 30s and currently living with me. She gets occasional work and does courses from time to time, but is mostly at home. She doesn't contribute to the household, not financially, which isn't my main concern, but even basic things like helping keep the house tidy or doing chores. I do ask, but I find myself avoiding it because I hate having to repeat myself. I work full time, and lately I find myself dreading coming home, especially if she's in a bad mood. I feel like I'm walking on eggshells around her. I'm also due to retire soon, and the thought of being at home all day in this atmosphere is really worrying me. When I ask her about her plans for the future, where she'd like to live or what she wants to do, she says she doesn't know. She tells me she hates being at home, but at the same time doesn't seem able to make a change. She says she's craving a sense of community, and I've suggested that might come if she chose a place to settle, but nothing moves forward. I can understand that she may be bored and isolated. We live in the countryside and she doesn't have transport, so she's quite stuck. I try to help by coming home at lunchtime sometimes and offering to take her out for a coffee. What I struggle with most is that she can seem indifferent towards me at times, and I'm afraid to say how I really feel. I dislike confrontation and worry about what might happen if I push things, and whether I'd be responsible if things went badly. How can I set boundaries and improve this situation without damaging our relationship?
Yeah, this one, I mean, interestingly enough, this is another kind of passive scenario where people are just not saying stuff that they feel or realistically needs to be said. Mm. And like, this situation, like, is definitely one that you need to accept the core concept that avoiding to confront this issue is actually making it worse.
Yes.
Because in this instance, she's allowing a pattern to form with her daughter, where her daughter is, you know, doing stuff that's, you know, not contributing much to the way that the house is, even as an adult, you know, cop on. Make, you know, contribute, please.
Mid-30s, that's kind of crazy to me.
It's outrageous. But then again, this kind of leads to another point, is that it's important to recognise that the daughter here is stuck. She's stuck in whatever rut that she's in, but is also really comfortable. You know, it's, you know, living in that family home with a mother that's afraid to broach, you know, what needs... That's great. You can sit there, wallow in your stuckness, and never have to make the difficult decisions or difficult actions to move yourself on in whatever way. Sometimes the worst place to be is to have that kind of an indulgent parent that, you know, allows you to wallow in, you know, life is hard and something went wrong and now I'm forever stuck. What you actually sometimes need is the kind of the prod of adversity or a good kick up the whatever to get you moving on.
Tough love.
And sometimes the toughest love is actually is for the mother to kind of, I'm avoiding using the word self-love for some of you, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
to love yourself enough to set strong boundaries about what works for you in this shared. Because, you know, this is a working person who's coming up to retirement age, and this is her own house, and she's acting about, you know, being afraid to go back to her own house because it's not a calm or peaceful space for her. Making these boundaries with her daughter are, it's not even that it's a good idea. It's actually compulsory.
Yeah.
You have to do this. Fear of being upsetting your daughter is, I mean, it's kind of understandable, but it's actually just, it's costing the mother her kind of peace of mind on one side. And it's also, as I mentioned earlier on, it's preventing the little bit of a shove out of the nest that the daughter might need.
Kicking a hand down the road.
And,
sort
you
of
know,
thing.
And it is that thing of like, you know, you have to call it out if it's if you think it's in the best interest of your daughter this is what it is. You got to say it now.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I mean, I, you know, I hate blaming the mother, but she has facilitated her late 30-year-old daughter to be living at home, as you say, very comfortably without having to give up financially, or and she's managing to get away with not doing anything around the house as well, which is outrageous. I think the key here and the thing, I mean, there's a lot of unanswered questions that the letter doesn't tell us. Like, why has she not got a job? Why has this woman in her late 30s not got a job? We live in an economy at the moment, you know, that jobs are fairly rife out there, you know. I do not understand why she doesn't have a job. All of us have to work in order to live. And that, to me, is the first criteria. And if
this relates to the comfort thing, though, relates to what I was saying about being really comfortable.
She doesn't need to work, so
she has a safety net of not having to make a decision.
Yeah.
And so, but if you're like, in that thing of not making a decision, it's very easy to
spiral and stay there. Very few of us have the comfort of that, of being able to say, well, I don't need to work because, like, I'm still living here and I don't have to pay any rent and I don't have to pay up for anything. So to me, that's the first thing the mother should be doing, is laying down, you need to get a job in order to pay your way. And then if she got herself a job, she may be able to get herself a car and at least get herself a little bit independent, and it would be the first step on the road. So I think that's the criteria. It's not about, you know, she's saying, how can she set boundaries? I think she needs to set an absolute, you need to get a job because you need to pay up a little bit at home. She doesn't need to pay up a lot, but just to have that principle established.
I think it's the way around. It should be the way around. It should be like, you have to contribute, you have to do this, and therefore the solution for you to do that would be for you to get a job.
Yeah, but I mean, we've all, you know, if you've had kids, you know, there's that period of time, like even in college, where you're kind of, when they're in college, that you're kind of saying, you know, you could, if, unless they're really doing something heavy, you know, you have a few hours, you could actually take a job in the shop or the bar or whatever and earn yourself a few bob, because you need to start as a parent withdrawing some of the financial supports that you have in place, obviously, when they're children. And it looks like this woman hasn't done it. It sounds like she's an only child as well. But I think that that's the first thing. But I also think I would say to this woman, don't be afraid to confront her. You know, you have to actually have that hard conversation, do that tough love.
What do you think that she meant?
You're not going to chuck her out.
What does she mean when she says, I don't know how this is going to go? Is this a mental health issue, or is this like our relationship might break down?
There seems like an inference of it, but not explicit.
But also, it could be just that the mother is one of these people who's terrified of confrontation and doesn't want any confrontation. So therefore,
but sometimes the thing about that is you have to actually say, if I say this, what is the worst thing that could happen? And what are they, and if they respond in this way, is that reasonable? Am I still correct?
Yeah.
Because that's how you go. That's the right avenue for me to do it, is to say, she might react like a banshee and lose her mind. That's not you. That's her. That's on her behavior. And as a 30-year-old, as Finol said,
she's also got a great opportunity when she says she's going to retire soon to use that.
Well, as someone has said that on text to say, I know it means she has to move, but could she say she wants to downsize now she's retiring and there won't be room in the new place for the daughter?
Or that she won't have as much financial security when she retires, so that, you know, the daughter's going to have to put her hand in her pocket and she's going to have to cough up some money at home. And it doesn't have to be a big argument, and there doesn't have to be a big like deadline, you have to do this by that time, but I think you just need to have a very straight, as two adults, you know, I mean, okay, she's your daughter, but you're two, she's a grown adult, so talk to her as a grown adult and tell her you need her to step up now, get a job, pay up at home and do some more around the house.
Yeah, one text here saying the daughter needs to enter the cash machine more often. Very good. Okay. Very good. Okay. We'll see how that pans out. Anyway, on to our next one. I recently left a job in marketing because I found the environment quite clicky and at times bitchy. It just wasn't a nice place to be, and leaving felt like the right decision for my mental well-being. However, a close friend of mine has just started working at the same company and she absolutely loves it. She's constantly talking about how friendly everyone is, how well she's getting on and how happy she feels there. I want to be supportive, but if I'm honest, it's starting to make me feel quite bad. It's making me question whether I overreacted or gave up too quickly, and even wonder if there was something wrong with me, if she's doing so well in the exact same place I struggled in. I also feel uncomfortable when she keeps bringing it up, but I don't want to seem jealous or unsupportive by saying anything. Should I say something to her or just keep it to myself?
Again, we're missing kind of pieces of the jigsaw here with this one. I'm assuming the person who wrote to us, who left the job, now has a new job in which she's reasonably content, considering it's a new job. And if that is the case, like, who cares how her friend is getting on in the old company? So what? Like, great for her if she's having a good time. This letter writer didn't. But again, as I say, so what? Life is made up, and jobs in particular, work in particular, depends a lot on human connection and human relationships and how you get on with your colleagues. And she didn't particularly. She found them clicky and bitchy. That's perfectly fine. And that's perfectly, you know, acceptable. Her friend, for whatever reason, didn't. She maybe has managed
clicky
to
bitch.
Get in. She's a clicky bitch.
She's yeah, call her out.
Yeah. So, like, you know, this woman just needs to stop overthinking this and stop thinking maybe she regrets leaving. Because even if she went back tomorrow, the fact that her friend is there doesn't necessarily change anything for her. So keep your face forward in your new job.
I think that sometimes when you have a bad experience in whether it's a job or whether it's, you know, with a group of people or a nightclub, you can kind of go, I don't ever want to go back there. I have a bad idea of that. And if somebody else then comes back and says, oh, I had the best time ever there, it was amazing, then you're forced to kind of deal with the, you know, a crack in your absolutism. You have to kind of acknowledge that that's just your opinion. It's not an actual fact. And we live in a culture these days where everything is about comparison and everything is about validation, especially if you spend time online. It's all about, you know, clicks, likes, and you're great and this is great and shared experience. We all think the same thing. And if we don't, it's very, oh my God, why do you not think the same thing as me? And it's very destabilizing. In this instance, this person is coming out of a bad experience, which kind of is emotionally like a bruise. And this other person in their life is now almost casting a shadow of disbelief on that experience, almost making out that, you know, it's like a validation thing that, you know, oh no, your experience wasn't real. Mm. So now everyone's going, oh my God, oh my God. She needs to realize that's just because she's playing the comparison game. She's saying, this is just somebody else's opinion. And not also, the same as a fact.
All of us have different perspectives. We're all not looking at anything from the same viewpoint.
Because it could be a guy you're talking about. You know, your ex-boyfriend who you thought was a total tool is now happily married with children down the road. That doesn't mean you were wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
That just means that he's better off with
And her
Chloe
experience
down
is her
26.
Experience. Like, so, and her friend's experience is her friend's experience.
Exactly.
Stop overthinking it.
I kind of can't help but think this is coming from a stronger place of jealousy than the listener is maybe letting on, which I think is maybe the crux of the issue as opposed to
the comparison
thing.
Like any big decision, and leaving a job is a big decision. And I think, you know, any big decision you make like that, you do have a period of like, oh, I hope I did the right thing. But like basing it on the fact that your friend is having a good time. I mean, that's just...
Every change that you make in life, it has an element of positive and an element of negative in it. You know, there's an element of failure in every kind of thing you move on from, because you're kind of going, it's failed in some way. It's failing to appeal to me anymore, or I failed to do whatever I need to do to stay there. But you move on, you acknowledge that there's a, you know, good and bad and all that scenario. And then you go, well, maybe somebody else is going to have a different experience. And I think if you're jealous of her succeeding in that scenario, an element of that is actually fair enough. You know, you know, I wish I could have been a, you know, a better
but
bitch.
But what are you going to do about it? You're not going to go back. Like, so, you know.
Yeah.
Like,
but can you say something to the friend?
No,
can you go?
Yeah.
Barbara said no, you said yes.
I think yes.
No, okay. I think you just, well, I mean,
how do you broach that though?
Because, you know, because if she's talking
to her for
talking about it and she's going, blah, 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 oh, great, blah, 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 you know. I would say something. Well, you had a great time there, but for me, I didn't really have as good a time as you did. And so sometimes when you're talking about it, it makes you feel uncomfortable because I'm kind of thinking that you have a totally different idea of these people than I do. And I don't think we're going to agree. So maybe we'll just change the subject.
Okay, well, that's fair enough then. He explained that very well, I think. Yeah, he did.
I don't know how the other person would react in that instance. Like,
because her truth
is
being undermined. Because her truth is worth more than your truth.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, that's all what it is, though. It's about validation and it's about... it's I'm delighted for you, Emily, that you love the job, and that's brilliant. I thought it was awful.
Yeah, I didn't.
Well, that's it.
Text in, that person with the friend working in her old company needs to forget about it. Just make sure not to meet the friend after work. And if the friend ends up marrying someone from work, that's when you can worry or just embrace the passing of time. I love how much that listener has
thought about
this.
Yeah, that's incredible. Yeah.
Okay, finally then. I've recently moved in with my girlfriend after we bought our first apartment together, which should be an exciting new chapter for us. The problem is, I'm already starting to dread coming home. She has very strong tastes when it comes to interior. Everything has to be pink or purple. And I don't just mean a few cushions or throws. The rugs are pink and purple. The bed linen is bright floral at times. It genuinely feels like I'm living in a Barbie dream house. To be fair, I always knew she loved pink. That's part of who she is. And I was happy to meet her halfway. In fact, I even agreed to a pink kitchen with purple tiles because I knew it would make her happy. But now it feels like every single room is going in the same direction and it's becoming a bit overwhelming. The thing is, I don't mind what the place looks like, as long as it's not all very, in quotes, girly colours. I'm happy for her to bring her style into it, but I'd like some balance so it feels like a shared home. When I've tried to explain, she says that if I don't care, then it shouldn't matter, and that she loves these colours. She's even suggested that the real issue is that I'm feeling emasculated, which isn't how I see it at all. I'd be absolutely mortified to bring any of the lads over to the place if she keeps going. I don't want to turn this into a big argument, but I also don't want to spend years living somewhere I'm uncomfortable in. Is it too much to ask for a few neutral tones? Who is this, Molly May? How do I approach this again and make a strong case for myself?
I'm just Ken was going over in my head from the movie, the Barbie movie. Yeah, come on, why won't you let me have a neutral wall in my house?
Dojo Casa house, you know. It is tricky though, because like he does all, like the house is his as well. Like
that's it. It's about that's the core of the thing is that saying that you don't care is not the same as saying that you won't have an opinion when it happens. Yeah. And it's about, you know, when something does happen, you are allowed to have a reaction to it. So that's the weird thing. It sounds like it's the passive active thing that we were talking about earlier on. Is that just because you're not rushing in going, I know what colour I want to paint the walls, doesn't mean that when somebody shows you a swatch that you weren't going to go, that's repulsive. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, having an interest in the home decoration is not the same as saying the red on the wall is giving me a headache. You know, so there's that thing to consider. Ultimately, though, this is also his house. And if she's making him feel like she's in charge of every decision in the house, that's really unfair. Finding a way to compromise is about having your feelings reflected in what you're looking at. And I think, look, when she's going pink, 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 that's arguably lovely for her, but it's actually not generally aesthetically pleasing. If you know, from this gay's perspective, that's a bit OTT.
It's a bit OTT.
So I kind of go like, and
do you not have a pink kitchen with purple tiles? No.
No, no. I'm more like, you know, I've never been
Minimalist.
In my kitchen.
You've never been in your kitchen.
You don't know what it looks like.
I'll ask the staff to tell me, you know. I'll ask them to tell me when they go.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, do you not think that, you know, like in any relationship, you know, they talk about compromise. I think compromise should be something that is visible. You should see that.
I'm surprised you haven't addressed this. I think there's also this underlying thing, and you see it if you watch any of the home renovation shows, that, you know, where they're building an extension or rebuilding a house, and then it's always Betty who's kind of going to be in charge of the decor and make all the decisions. It's always the woman. And that is ridiculous. But I do think that some men automatically kind of go, yeah, I'll bail out of that. Mm. And now he's regretting the fact that he obviously bailed out at some stage. He went, I don't really mind, whatever you like, dear. And now he's got a pink kitchen with purple tiles.
But it extends into further than that, though, is that like if you are the kind of woman who has subscribed to that kind of, you know, girly thing, and you want to be the person who's picking out the swatches and living as your, you know, your Sunset Boulevard kind of building your house of your dreams kind of, I'm doing all the decor and I'm finding my Farrow and Ball paint and all that kind of stuff. And that's what you want to be and you want to do that. That's fine. And if he's letting you do that, that's also
doubly
fine. But I
mean, if there's
fine.
Two people living in the house and two people paying the bills, the other person, number one, what I'm saying is he needs to get involved at the get-go. It's a bit like closing the gate after the horse has gone off down the road now at this stage. So he should have been doing this from the get-go. I mean, it's all right letting her decide, but he needs to have the right of veto over stuff, do you know?
Which is what she's not letting him have. Because
she's not letting him have,
He has clearly said that he had no problem with her going pink bonkles in the kitchen.
Purple tiles,
That's kind of, you know, and that could be actually quite fab, actually. So, you know, whatever, knock yourself out
really?
There. But then, yeah, you know, everything can be made look tasteful, Barbara. Don't worry.
I'm sure.
But the reality of it is then dragging that theme into all the rooms. So it does literally become like a doll's house in some kind of weird or horror
also,
movie
like,
scenario.
I think there is a thing in psychology that like the decor, the colours in particular you surround yourself with does have an effect on your mood. You know?
Yeah, don't they say, like, you can't, don't paint anything yellow because it'll stress you out, and blue is calming.
And too much red is too much fire energy. Do you know what I mean? So you'd have a lot of red. It's good in a dining room where you want conversation, but like not in other room, like bedrooms where you need it to be calm. See, there you go.
Some of that might be true, but some of it might not be true, I think. You know,
It's all true.
Well, yeah, but you know.
Obviously. But he should, he definitely needs to call a halt to this, and he needs to put some, but he's left it a bit late. It's a pity he didn't think of doing this earlier on in the game.
Yeah, hard conversations to be had. Barbara, you're on tour, are you?
I'm starting my new tour, my new show, which is called Because I'm Worth It. And the first show is on the 30th of April in the Cock Tavern in Swords, part of the Swords Comedy Festival. And then I'm around the country after that. All the dates are on my website, barbarascully.com.
Stunning.
Did I do that very fast?
I love it. Yeah, we appreciate speed around here. Barbara Scully and Declan Buckley, thank you so much for joining us. So you think you're an adult.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.